is WWE former superstar, Brodus Clay, a.k.a. the Funkasaurus, and TNA's new star, Kyrus. I make sure you check out the Gerwig podcast with Steve Gerwig and Frank D.
Funk is on a roll. Funk is on a roll. Hey,
yo. Can somebody call my mama? It's about to get funky up in here.
Thursday, October the 9th, 2014. I am Steve Gerwig, along with my tag team partner, Frank D. A special edition today of the Gerwig Report podcast, because today we have a very special guest, the former WWE superstar, the Funkasaurus himself, Brodus Clay. How are you doing today, Brodus?
Man, I'm maintaining room temperature. Thanks for having me on. I've officially made it. In the wrestling business, because I made it on a Gerwig show. So I'm excited. Thank you very much for having me.
Whoa, put us over like neck bone. I like that.
Yeah.
Well, Brodus, right up front here, we know you've been you were released from WWE in June. What have you been up to? I know you've been banging in the gym, and kind of update us on what's going on with Brodus Clay these days.
You know, I've been wrestling everywhere, which is great and which I always wanted to do. I've been to UK, been all over the United States, been pretty much busy, actually more busier now than I was when I was under contract. And now I have the freedom to do what I want to do and pursue the style of wrestling that I've always wanted to do. I get to be more aggressive, more physical, more time in the ring, you know, and not be so, you know, in the WWE you have a role to fill, and it makes sense. Not every match can be a championship match. Not every guy can be the, you know, the tough guy. You got to build the card. That still has its place. But now that I'm on my own and building my own legend, or whatever you want to call it, wrestling resume, I'm excited I get to do my own thing now.
You know, I thought with the Funkasaurus, you were getting over with the crowd. You were starting to click. And I was really surprised to see them let you go. I know I don't really want to start on a somber note, but obviously, as we mentioned, you were released in June. You've had, of course, a few months now to think about it, maybe talk to people. Have you gotten any really information, or do you know anything into why the company cut ties with you in June?
You know what? It was one of those things where it doesn't really matter, does it? You know, like, they cut ties. Just like when your girl leaves you, you know what I'm saying? She left you. So to spend time trying to figure out why and what happened, it just was a waste of time with me. I know that, you know, for whatever reason, they were unhappy with me. And, you know, and I was unhappy with them, so sometimes the best thing to do is just to break ties. You know, I think it was, you can maybe say that it was maybe one thing or maybe a bunch of little things, but, you know, nothing is forever. And to be honest with you, man, I thought I would miss the WWE a lot more than I do. You know, I don't really miss it. I don't even miss the voice because we all stay in touch. So it's kind of like, you know, you always want to say, I want a chance to do this, I want a chance to do that. And the WWE is the WWE, you know, it's the greatest wrestling machine in the history of man. And, but there's all kinds of places for guys to work, and you can still make a great living, as a wrestler, not necessarily as a sports entertainer. And so the opportunity to, you know, build your own resume is there. And I'm taking, you know, I'm taking the full opportunity of it. I'm really enjoying myself. I'm really, it's nice. I get more time at home, and more time to train, and, really dedicated myself in the gym and just being me again. And like, you know, just having fun again, you know, without the stress and strain of not knowing what I'm doing and where I'm doing and what direction, storylines and all that kind of stuff. I just, it was a well-deserved break.
If I can ask you, Brodus, can you tell me, and, you know, tell us a typical day at a WWE TV taping? You know, how does the process work, you know, when you get there?
Well, you know, you have so many things to do now with the networks, interviews and stuff like that. So typically, you're looking at call time anywhere from 12 to 1 o'clock, depending on what side of the, you know, the country you're on. You go in, you know, you get things settled. Usually, a lot of guys will just get changed, just get loose. If we're going to go roll around the ring or whatever, stretch out. Then you go roll over to town relations, see what they need you to do, you know, and then they usually have a bunch of things you need to do, and you know, whether it's an interview or a phoner or, you know, you got to shoot something for the network, you know, you have your whole list of stuff you got to do. If you got pre-tape or something like that, you know, and then later in the day, you know, you find out who you're going to do battle with, and then, you know, you get to mentally prepare yourself for that. And then, you know, you have showtime. So, long day. TV days can be, you know, like the most stressful because there's so much up and down, everything changes so fast. And this is the only business where, you know, live TV, you literally, you can change within, before you go out there, nothing's certain. You know, where like other shows, they have their scripts and they have their pre-tapes and their stuff like that. You know, Monday Night Raw is 100% live. And, you know, it can be extremely stressful in terms of being prepared. But the one thing great about, you know, being in WWE, it prepares like auditions and like improv situations and like for going for TV shows and stuff like that. You're so prepared and so far ahead of like a normal actor because you do it all the time. So auditions and stuff, in my experience, has been, they'll be like, hey, can you do this? Like, yeah, no problem. And they'll sometimes tell you a day before, so you're almost like, wow, I have so much time. So preparation and just being prepared for anything is pretty much the best way to describe a day in the WWE.
Now, Brodus, I heard an interview you did that you said that you were a lifelong wrestling fan. I just was curious. Actually, a two-part question here is, from your experience, how many of the active wrestlers do you think were lifetime wrestling fans, you know, grew up watching wrestling all the time? Or is there a lot of wrestlers from your perspective that, you know, kind of got interested in wrestling maybe in their teen years or before high school? And then the second part of the question would be, who would be some of your favorites that you grew up watching?
I would say, to be successful, like truly successful in wrestling, you'd have to be a lifelong fan, just like any other sport, basketball, football, baseball, you know, guys who played it from day one. You know, there's a few guys who pick it up along the way and their lifespan or whatever, but I'd say probably about, as far as the guys go, I'd say probably 85% to 90% are lifers in terms of like fans of business. Divas, not as much. You get a few here and there, but a lot of them, you know, they came from other walks of life, you know, whatever. But as far as the boys go, I would say most guys, because it's one of those things where if you don't love it, you can't do it. You just, it's like you see guys who go, oh, hey, I want to do it. And then they realize it's not just walking out in front of the crowd. You know, all the work and time and energy and sacrifices, you know, like home life is tough because you're never home. You know, you pretty much are, if you're a parent, if you're a FaceTime parent, you're a FaceTime boyfriend, things like that, you know, husband. So you give up a lot, you know, to do what you want to do. So if you don't love it, you're not going to do it for very long. So, and I've always surrounded myself with the guys who kind of think the same way I do in terms of we sit around, we watch old videos and critique matches and talk about stuff. And then you have the agents there, so you can always bug them all the time, make them tell you stories. And that was always one of my things. One of my favorite people of all time was Howard Finkel, still is, and I would just corner him every chance I get and make him tell me stories about Gorilla Monsoon, who was like in my opinion, the greatest commentator of all time. No, you know, no disrespect to Mr. Jim Ross, but who's great in his own right. But Gorilla for me, because I grew up hearing that voice. My mother used to say if she could get him on record and tell me to clean my room and do my homework, I probably would have did it. And King Haku. All-time favorite, you know, the American Dream, Dusty Rhodes was a big favorite of mine. Anybody in the Heenan family, I was a big Double A, and I liked him and Tully together. I thought that version of the Horseman, when they had Barry Windham, was probably my favorite. So many guys I liked though. I was just a fan. It didn't really matter what organization. If GWF was on, I'd play sick at, you know, so I could sit home and watch the final who was going to win the tournament. You know, I just loved it. It just made, and I love the fact that the guys came back every week, and you could count on that. And you know, I wasn't a big Hogan fan. I always, you know, when he beat Orndorff in the cage, I remember, you know, crying, and my mother saying I wasn't going to be allowed to watch it anymore because I took it too seriously. Orndorff's feet hit first, and feet hit first, Ma, his feet hit first, you know, and just those memories or whatever. And me and my brother just trying so hard to convince, you know, wherever we were at to let us stay up till 11:30 to watch Saturday Night Main Event. Please, please, we'll do our chores, we'll do whatever you want, you know, like, just really enjoy it. It was just great memory. So it was cool to, that maybe somewhere out there there was some kid who was, like, trying to stay up late to make the season, Funkus Horse was coming on tonight. But it was just a part of, like, my identity growing up as a kid.
Can you do a good Dusty impersonation?
I don't like doing impersonations unless the person's in the room and I'm back. I think that's the most overdone impersonation, and it's always just, they make it sound like everything he says with a lift. And, you know, and as my great teacher would tell me, he, you know, he doesn't teach wrestling, he teaches art. And, you know, you got to paint your canvas. And actually, my last day with the company, I went up to, and he was listening to Neil Diamond, and I went up and rolled around the ring by myself and just went and sat and talked with him. And, you know, he's like, you got to paint your canvas no matter what it is. You know, you can't let him take you. And then, you know, ironically, the next day I was released. So the same guy who always believed in me and was always in my corner and helped me a great deal with the Funkasaurus character, bringing that out and having the confidence to do that was the American Dream. As Coach, you know, Coach Rhodes and Coach DeMond, there were so many guys that were, like, influential in helping me, you know, establish that character. So it was good to spend some time with him.
Just in general, you were saying that, you know, Dusty was a – but you're a big fan of Dusty growing up and Arn Anderson. Just kind of just thoughts on, you know, working with those guys. I mean, you grew up watching them, and all of a sudden here they are kind of your coaches and your mentors in the business.
It's very humbling. And both guys are great teachers in their own right, and they're great coaches. You know, if they – in any other walk of life, those guys, those would be your, you know, your line coaches, your defensive coordinators, you know, when I think of sports. You know, AA, I don't know how many soap and wet t-shirts he had working with me. You know, there's so many guys that just were great. You know, Mr. Rotundo was, man, he helped me so much. He doesn't get a lot of the limelight, but, I mean, he's one of the best teachers out there. You know, Dean Malenko, you know, the Road Dog is great with character stuff and also just telling you like it is. And I relied on the agents more than I relied on ever talking to Triple H or Mr. McMahon or Stephanie. I always talked, I stuck with the agents, you know, wasn't much for bugging the, you know, the bosses and stuff. But there was just so many different, you know, Jamie Noble, so many guys that would take extra time to help you get things right. And they were brutally honest, you know. That's the one thing I liked about AA is I always thought he was hard on me, but I always respected him. You know, he never would tell me good job. If he didn't think it was a good job, he just, you know, he'd tear it apart. And I always liked that, even if I hated him. And, you know, and they were great teachers, and I really enjoyed my time with them.
Brodus, you signed to the WWE, I believe, in 2006, and you were down at the Deep South wrestling out there in Georgia. Can you talk a little bit about that facility and working in the Deep South, the Georgia territory, as opposed to working at the, say, Performance Center?
Well, the Performance Center, I really didn't work there. I went in there a few times and rolled around. FCW is where I cut my teeth, and you know, the Performance Center is just phenomenal, but that was my time in developmental was done then. But Deep South is where I learned you know, what it took to be in the business. You know, we had Dave Taylor, Bill DeMont, we had quite a few guys that came in and out, Jody Hamilton, Dr. Tom Pritchard. So there was a lot of great minds, and that's where, you know, I got a chance to cut my teeth and learn how to work. And, you know, we were a close bunch, and we trained hard two times a day. We didn't get a lot of house shows and stuff like that, so we were kind of cut off from society a little bit. So we were probably more like monsters and just train. If we weren't in the gym, we were doing 2-a-days, and we were always just working on our craft and stuff like that. So we were kind of cut off from the world. We were like in a little island. But I enjoyed my time there, and had a lot of fun, and it was a lot of hard work. There was a lot of, you know, blood, sweat, and tears, and I know some guys didn't like it, but coming from a football background where the offensive line coach pushed me every day, I didn't know any other way to but work their stuff, so I never had a problem with Deep South. You know, I know you know each other horror stories and stuff, but I just enjoyed the working, and, like, you know, coach was strict but fair, and, you know, I didn't really have a problem.
Now, you were in Deep South, and then they let you go originally. The first time you were let go, did you consider maybe getting out of wrestling? Because I know you were also a bodyguard for Snoop Dogg. And what kind of brought you back to the business at that time?
You know, quite honestly, when I got let go the first time, I never made it to TV or anything. So I kind of felt like, you know, well, I gave it, you know, 100%. I did my best. And, you know, they didn't see anything in me or whatever. So, and I had a standing offer to go back to work for, Snoop. So, you know, I went back for the money and I put it as one of those things where, I did my best. I tried hard. You know, I worked hard. I came to work every day with good attitude and, you know, it just didn't work out. So, just chalk it up and, move forward with my life and, traveling with Snoop, and we're doing our thing. And it was actually Snoop who really talked me into going back. We were coming back from an Australia tour, and he had to host Monday Night Raw in Jacksonville, and I wanted no part of going back. I was like, can you switch me out? And then we land in Jacksonville, we have another bodyguard there to take you, because you know, I got fired from there, and I didn't want to be. I've always seen those guys who got let go, and they're like backstage, and it's awkward. You know what I'm saying? And they're like just kind of holding up the wall, and like, you know, guys are like giving them the fake hellos and stuff. And then it's weird. No one goes back. You know, when you get fired from a regular job, you don't go back. You know? So that's kind of how I looked at it. You know, pride was messing with me a little bit. And Snoop's like, I'm sorry, I can't switch you out, bro. You got to finish this. And so I had to go. And literally, I walked in the door, and John Laurinaitis said that, you know, the door's still open, and, you know, we might have overreacted and stuff. And, you know, we will, you know, bring you back. And I was like, well, if I have some time to think about it, he said, sure. And, you know, I talked to Snoop about it afterwards, and he was like, you feel you've done all you can do? And I was like, no. He's like, you can always bodyguard, baby, but you can't always wrestle, so why don't you go back? So, you know, and then that's where the name Brodus Clay came from. Snoop's last name, Calvin Brodus, so out of respect for him, since he's the one to talk to me, he made my ass go there, so, you know, I think I gave it up to him. I remember the first time I pitched the name Brodus Clay to Dusty Rhodes, he laughed. He goes, you sound like a hillbilly. Brodus Clay? I was like, it's not a hillbilly name. I'm telling you, it's cool. And he was like, I don't know. I was like, how about Brodus Pryor? And it's like, no, we'll go with Clay. We'll go with Clay. So, you know, the American Dream okayed the name. So, Dream okayed it, Snoop okayed it, then it was all right.
So let me ask you this: when you went down there to you got back with the company and you were on the FCW some of the FCW house shows, I'm not sure, but I believe you were going by a name before. You were called G Rilla or something like that.
Yep, G Rilla was Coach DeMond gave me that name. I could think of a million things, but when I came to picking my own name, I couldn't think of none. So. You know, in my neighborhood, nickname growing up was Rilla, because my knuckles drag when I walk. So, you know, I was like Rilla and George, I don't know, G Rilla. And like, Coach was like, fine, smart ass G Rilla. And I was like, no, that's terrible. And he's like, that's your name, sorry. And, think of something else. And I couldn't. So that was it. I was G Rilla after that. So.
Now, when I originally saw you, though, you came on WWE TV. Yeah, I know you did a little something with NXT. And then you came over to the main roster, and you were actually the bodyguard for Alberto Del Rio. So after that, though, they kind of took you off TV for a while, and then they started showing these promos that Brodus Clay was coming. And it was some intense stuff they were showing on the screen, and all of a sudden you come out, and somebody called my mama. So,
yep. You just described exactly how it happened.
Yeah,
I was going one way and then got hit thrown with a curveball and just had to make it work. And when they threw the curveball at me, I was like, "What? I don't dance. Like I've never danced in my damn life. Even at the club, I just popped my head and let the girl dance on me. I don't.
Right.
What? Dance? Like no. Like I crack jokes. I'd be better off." Just give me a microphone and let me do some stand-up. I'd probably be better at that than I'd be freaking dancing. And I just went, I just said, well, can I go see the Dream, please? And I went with the Dream, and I still have the DVD of him and me dancing to Move Like Jagger to Find the Rhythm.
Yeah.
And, you know, then I went to Naomi and said, I need your help. And at the time, she was kind of, I didn't really know what was going on with her, and So I went to Dusty and we put the idea together, and you know, and Naomi was like, cool, you know, I got you back. And really, she was overqualified, to be honest with you. I mean, she got a world champion written all over, and she's a tremendous athlete, just a great person. So she was cool enough to lower herself to help me. So, and then Cameron at the time was working with her, so the two of them just kind of fit. And we just kind of went from there. And then, you know, luckily no one found out about the debut, which is rare these days, you know, because everything leaks and stuff. And so we shocked the world. And I remember Triple H says, whatever you do, don't look on the internet. And I said, I don't look at that stuff anyways, man. I'm not tripping. I don't care. You know, we debuted, we got out there, and, you know, I'm going to make it work. And, you know, after a few weeks, I really was enjoying it, having fun with it. And, you know, the purists and the ones who wanted the monster were pissed, but the kids really took to it. And for me, who, you know, always kind of had a soft spot for the Junkyard Dog and, you know, the American Dream Dusty Rhodes and guys that came out, and, you know, having the kids dance in the ring, I thought was a great tribute to JYD. It's something that when I saw it happen, I always thought it was cool and remembered it. So it was cool. And even now, that's who I'm kind of compared to. And that, I think that's a tremendous honor, you know. You know, those who don't know the wrestling history, JYD was one of the hottest baby faces of all time, especially Mid-South. You couldn't touch him. So just to be in the same sentence as him means, you know, we did something right. So I can't, you know, as far as like championships and big pushes, not really concern myself with that, but just the fact that I go places and people still, you know, kids still, which sometimes can bite me on the ass a little bit, because I'll be beating somebody up really bad on a indie show somewhere, and after the match, the kids don't care. You know, I'm like, wait a minute, I'm mean now. I'm like, no, you're still him. And doesn't matter, you know, I wrestled Homicide for Syndicate, and, you know, they're more of an adult crowd, and, you know, Homicide comes out, and the crowd, you know, they're like an ECW crowd where they're chanting, you know, Homicide's going to F you up, Homicide's going to F you up, and, you know, it's a New York town, and you know, then I got a chance to, you know, I think it was a pin drop when I told New York what they could do with it, and they go, and they're like, whoa, Funkasaurus just cut. And, you know, we had a real aggressive street fight kind of match, and Ricardo's and me and Ricardo put the band back together for one night. So, you know, I had him, and I remember, and then afterwards, they talked about how I hated the kids, and, you know, you guys are just good for buying my merch and all that stuff. And I come walking out, you know, they're like, hey, you mind doing a signing before you go? And there was a line of kids there. And I was like, what are these guys? And they're like, oh, you were funny. I'm like, what? Like, the kids just don't care. So, and I'm like, I blame parents for that, but whatever. So that's one thing, it'll just always stick with me. You know, kids, I don't think no matter what I do to those kids that dance in the ring and got to see it live and all that stuff, that's who I'll always be to them. And that's cool. I can take that. But, you know, when I look back on it, man, I had a lot of fun with that character. And I'll never get a chance to do it again like that. And I can always be tough, but I don't think I could ever be, you know, the Funkasaurus again. So I'll enjoy it. And it was something that, you know, people were always asking about. And it was, at the time when it was going down, I was having coronary heart attacks myself, going, what is this? I'm going to come out there, and this is going to be horrible.
Yeah.
But you never, you know, they know better than we do. So
sometimes.
You know,
sometimes.
Yeah, I'll say sometimes.
Yeah.
I agree.
You know, you went through developmental, you went through Deep South Wrestling, then you went to Florida Championship Wrestling and trained, and obviously did the NXT show as well. When you were brought up to the main roster, do you feel like, you know, mentally and physically you were ready for the big time?
Yeah, I mean, I think they had thrown every possible roadblock in front of me to, you know, like, ah, let's see if he gets through this, ah, let's see if he gets through this, see if he can do this, you know. So by the time you got to the roster, you're just ready. Because you just want that crowd. You want to work, and that's the big difference, you know. I argue it's more stressful and developmental than it is on the roster. Because you just, on the developmental, you just don't know. It can change every week, you know, and your name could change, your character could change, your spot could change, you know, they could, budget cuts could come in. Like, you just don't know, you know. So in the main roster, it's still stressful. It's still, you know, it's still got to earn your spot, but you know, developmental can be extremely, like, just frustrating and mentally overwhelming at times.
Can you talk a little bit about the creative process in WWE? Are the writers open to suggestions as far as character development, lines to say, you know, promo types, or is it pretty much you come in on a Monday or a Tuesday to do tapings and they say, okay, Brodus, here's what it is and go for it? Or is there a little bit of wiggle room, or are they...
They'll lay out stuff, but no, you have the right, you know, if it doesn't feel comfortable, you have the right to switch things. And be honest with you, if I would have went with their writing, my name would have been Heavy G. For a guy on a diet, that's the last thing you want to be called. Not to mention, Heavy D just died 2 weeks before that. So I'm like, there's no way in hell I'm going to be Heavy G. And, you know, I came up with the name Funkasaurus from Planet Funk, you know, with my trainer Rob. Like, we were actually lift benching and trying to figure out a better name than that. Because I was like, there's no way in hell that I'm coming out to Heavy G. I might as well just stamp a fat ass on my head. So, you know, it just wasn't, and I remember just the writer said, well, what do you got? I was like, Funkasaurus. He was like, you want to go with that? I'm like, yep, you got it. So, you know, and I think looking back at that, Funkasaurus was a whole lot better than, you know, Heavy G. I don't think there would have been a Heavy G wrestling buddy, you know. So,
that's right. True.
So, you know, that's wiggle room. You know, they're creatively, you got to, at the end of the day, it's your words. You got to make it you. You know, I think one of the greatest stories ever was told by Gangrel, who was, you know, when he was with the Brood, and it was him, Christian, and Edge, and it was kind of designed for Gangrel, honestly. And they had a big promo night, and he wasn't really comfortable with what was written, but he went with it anyways, and it didn't go very well. Whereas Edge just went on his own and just made it his own, and then next thing you know, it became about Edge, and that's the perfect example of you got to make it your own. And, you know, I learned a lot from him when he said that. You know, that always stuck with me. Like, if you don't feel it, it's not right, make it yours. It's better to ask for forgiveness than permission. So, you know, that always stuck with me. So, you know, if they tell you something, you don't feel it, you know, and guys, you know, you got to say it, you know. Top guys all the time, Punk, Cena, those guys, if they see something they don't like it, they'll be like, hey, you gotta have that same mindset, you know. But looking back at it, but once I became frustrated, I stopped talking to creative, and that's on me. But I'm like one of those guys, if I don't like somebody, I don't talk to them. So that's something that I was always, you know, when I got bugged with something, I wasn't a guy to be like, hey, I don't like this. I just be like, I'm not doing it. But yeah, creative is, you're your own, you know, people see you. They don't say, oh man, creative had him say stupid stuff tonight. They say, oh man, Broda said dumb shit tonight, you know. So you gotta make it yours, or as they say, make it your own.
Well, let me ask you this, Brodus, because you brought up, you know, a little while ago, you brought up working with Homicide and how you were a heel at this point, and you went out there and, you know, you told the fans exactly, you know, in character what you thought of them and everything, and they still, it didn't matter. They still wanted you to sign autographs. They still wanted to see you dance. So my question to you, you being on the inside of the WWE at one point, the question I have is about John Cena. It's been debated for many, 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 many years that John Cena should turn heel. And the reason why the WWE doesn't turn John Cena heel is because they're afraid maybe that he won't sell as much merchandise, or the Make-A-Wish Foundation deal might be in jeopardy. But, you know, we all remember when Hulk Hogan turned back in 96, how that thing worked out. Do you think that, you being there, do you think that eventually one day Cena could turn it and that could work for him?
I would argue that Cena is our version of Steamboat in terms of, like, it's just a great babyface. And the fact that, and I would argue he is a heel in some aspects. You go to certain parts of the country, they boo the, you know, the guys hate him, the girls and kids love him. And I think it's great that, you know, he doesn't let anybody dictate it. You know, Cena's in his own island, and whether you love him or hate him, he's going to do his thing. So I'm actually a fan. So I think it's great that he doesn't. The Hogan thing worked, and I don't think it would work again with the babyface. I think everyone's going to want that. And not getting that sometimes is the best thing. What Hogan did when he went NWO, it was everything, the moon, the stars, everything was right. And he was over, you know, the Hogan thing, it kind of fizzled out. And, well, not fizzled out. I mean, the man's Hogan. Not, you know, his fizzle is somebody's career. But, you know, that NWO thing was... And it's been kind of, everyone's tried to recreate that so many times, and it's bombed every time. You just can't do it. and you shouldn't do it, you know. And Cena is you know, this whole hustle, loyalty, respect, and all that other kind of stuff. And for him to turn heel, like, what would it even be? You know, like, I wouldn't. He is what he is, and you can boo him if you want and cheer for him if you want, you know. He's an institution, so why change it? But that's just my feel on it, you know. Like, I just think things have changed in the business. I think because every heel is cool now, there isn't really like a hateable heel, you know. Like, I think if you are a heel, you shouldn't have sponsors. Everyone should hate you, you know. Like, that's what bothered me so much about when Lord Tenzai came in and everyone was chanting Albert, oh, we hate this guy, we hate his look. Like, finally, we have a real heel. And when he comes out, you're going to want to cheer for the babyface to kick his ass. But, you know, like, everybody's cool now. So it's frustrating as a wrestling fan. Like, the Black Barts of the world and, you know, those evil heels that, you know, the great Kabuki and, you know, they weren't, you hated them. You know what I mean? They weren't the Gary Harts and stuff. Like, when they came out, you're like, oh, man, I wish this guy wasn't on TV. You know, but you watch and see who was going to kick his ass or whatever. So I enjoy that. So I think it's cool that, you know, he just stays as his own thing. But that's just me. Just looking at it as a wrestling perspective. And as the business is, have somebody beat him out. You know, but get that so big that you've got to turn him, you know. But I don't think it's been done yet.
Do you think, though, that at this point, you know, if it, to me as a fan, and I'm looking at John Cena, and this is a guy that everybody wants to see turn that corner. I think what the problem is with Cena is at one point he was the Dr. Thuganomics. You know, he was going out there rapping, and he was, you know, a little, his character was a lot more edgier, and now he's stale. It kind of got
stale for who, though?
I think he's stale for the entire adult, you know, male audience.
But that's why you guys have Brock, and you guys have Cesaro, and you guys have, like, whoever you are, you know what I'm saying? Like, that's the thing to me is, like, I don't think you should appeal to everybody. And that's why you have, you know, a roster of different guys or whatever. You know, the guys who like CM Punk didn't like Cena, and the people who like Cena didn't like CM Punk. And then when those guys got in the ring, the fans would cheer. And that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it's become more of a home or away crowd, depending on where you're at. You know, if you're in New York, they love the heels. You know, if you're in the West Coast, you know, they love the baby faces. You know, and it's become more of a home field advantage type thing. And, it's, you know, I actually dig that. I think that's cool. I think that's just the evolution of the business. Depends on what side of the where you're at. You know, you go to Boston, you know, they'll be nuts for him. And if you go to New York, they'll boo him or whatever. And it's a reaction. Whether it's good, bad, or different, it's a reaction. And they're showing up, you know, and the people are still buying the stuff. So, and honestly, it's really none of my business anymore. But as far as, you know, like, I'm concerned, if it ain't broke, why fix it, you know? I think guys don't like it. Cool. That's part of it, you know? I can't stand that guy. He's got abs, all the chick bubbles. Awesome, you know?
Yeah, and I respect that because at the end of the day, it's all about making money. It's all about as much money as you can make. But as a fan, for me, growing up watching, you know, WCW and where the business was, and at the time, the business was a lot more exciting than it is now. And it's like, you know,
because you had competition. You had two big networks going at it. You had variety. You know, you had you know, and when we're growing up watching this, there were like three or four different, you know, if you weren't watching, you could watch AWA, you could watch WCW,
right.
You could watch Mid-South, you could watch, I mean, it was so much more in terms, and guys had more chances to get seasoned, and you had guys coming in from different territories, you go, oh man, One Man Gang's here, oh man, King Kong Bundy's, you know what I mean, and you get all excited. We don't really have that anymore, you know, you have one big, giant company, and that's pretty much, with the exception of, if you're a true fan, you find the ROHs and you go to the, you know, the independent scenes or you check out the TNA stuff, but it's not, it's just not the same in terms of like as much TV time and exposure as it used to be. I mean, but I do noticing just being out of the indie scenes that people are starting to turn away from the TV and starting to go to these live events and these different independent shows and you know, the turnouts and where before you hear indie shows, you know, they average like 500 or like 200 people. They're having 2,000, you know, people showing up for shows and stuff like that. And so it's, I think change is there. You know, people are starting to like, hey, I want to see this, and you know, maybe the machine isn't the only place in the world to see wrestling. So it is what it is. But the business is always changing, and that's good. It's good for everybody. But going back to your point, I just think that, you know, with Cena, whatever he does, is, you know, he knows what he's going to do. And the guys, you know, don't like him, then awesome. Because that makes it, you know, someone's got a chance Cena sucks, and someone's got a chance we love Cena. So as long as it's 50-50 or 60-40 or whatever, then it's working.
You know, in terms of, you know, right now we're in a PG era. Obviously, we went through the Attitude Era. Now it's definitely PG, and I think that's what a lot of wrestling fans miss is the edgy characters, the edgy storylines. And I think, you know, looking at the TV ratings, it bears it out a little bit. I mean, the Raw's down to a 2.6 rating when we had 3.3, 3.4s. I mean, an era where they would do 5 ratings, 6 ratings, and now, you know, we are down quite a bit. Do you just feel that overall the popularity of wrestling is way down?
I don't know if it's that. I think it's just going through a change. You know, there's that, everyone's waiting for that next big star to change the game, you know?
Right.
And they kind of went through it for a little while before Stone Cold and The Rock and Mankind and, you know, Triple H and Undertaker and those guys. And that whole group just kind of took off. There was that kind of that lull there where we like had like Manator and stuff like that, you know, and, you know, it was like that era where you're like, oh, who's next? You know, you just don't know. Not just that, but, you know, honestly, if we ran an Attitude Era show right now, the show would be shut down. Twitter would be alert. Every group would come out and be like, they're disrespecting women. They're disrespecting, you know, different groups. They're not, you know, they're not being, if they're not family oriented, like, would have Republicans, Democrats basing their whole electoral campaign on the smut of the WWE. I mean, if you look at the way our culture has changed in the United States, you can't get away with that. You know, on national TV, a man putting hands on a woman and like things like that would just not be tolerated. You wouldn't have, you know, Susan B. Anthony. You wouldn't have those groups sponsoring you and being able to be a part of stuff like that. You know, so our culture has changed. It's not the same thing. We can't go out and do that. You know, if Al Snow came out right now and on my around, what does everybody want? They'd be like, we don't want a mannequin head. Where's the rest of the body? Like, it's just changed. You know what I'm saying? It's not the same. It's not the same thing. Like, you can't get away with it. You can't get away with it anymore. You know, it's just, there's too much, you know, sensitivity, and America is just so uptight now, you know?
I totally agree with that. It's too uptight. There is no attitude anymore, and I don't know what attitude went.
Big Show makes a comment about Russia, and then he has to call and apologize. I mean, it's changed.
Yeah.
You know? No one says, oh, well, it's just a good show, and the villain's the villain. Could you imagine if Sergeant Slaughter came out right now and tried to burn the flag? Oh, my God.
Yeah.
You know, although he burned Hogan jersey, but if he would have burned, if Russo came out and burned a Cena shirt, I guarantee you the fallout would be, you know, you'd be like, oh man, and it'd be apologies, and it'd be a panel on CNN, and you know, and everybody would have, you know, these feelings, and they would have to put together a panel of experts from around the world on what the psychological effect on children, and you know, it'd just not worth it.
When you were part of the machine towards the end of your run there, they actually, you know, added Tensai to your act, and then you guys were a tag team. You guys broke up. You turned heel. What were the plans for heel Brothers Clay?
No idea. Literally towards the end, bro, I didn't know what day of the week it was. Honestly, it was. I thought we were going in one direction, and you know, it just. Looked like we had some legs for a second, and then we just didn't. And I can't, you know, I really can't comment, because at that point, you know, and tagging with Tenzai was probably, from a learning standpoint, one of the, you know, highlights of my career. He just doesn't get enough credit for how good he is. And as a heel, man, he's great. And as a babyface, he's great. He always had a great attitude, and I learned a lot working with him. You know, to this day, I call him friend. So, I definitely wish, you know, him and I would have finished different, better. You know, our feud never really started. Just kind of like, it was like I was shooting with Xavier, I was shooting with Truth, I was shooting with him, then I wasn't. It was just, I just didn't know what was going on. I thought I hit a home run with that promo on the main event to set things up, and, you know, it wasn't even the aired main event, so it was on the net. So, and it still did well, but, you know, it was just one of those things where you gotta, it's not in the cards for you anymore. It doesn't matter what you do, but, and it is what it is, but I try not to dwell on that too much because I'm just, you know, towards the end, it was just as much my fault, you know, because I stopped talking, and, you know, I was frustrated all the time, and, you know, if you ain't got nothing good to say, don't say nothing. So, closed mouths don't get fed. So,
very, very true.
I think, you know, if I'm going to do it over again, maybe I'd talk more or whatever, but it is what it is, and I'm glad that where I'm at now, and I'm a lot happier than I was towards the end, so good things on the horizon. Well, I'm just waiting.
You tweeted a picture a few months ago of you, and I believe you were wearing a Bullet Club t-shirt. So
yeah.
Is there, you know, is it possible in the future we can see Brodus Clay a member of the Bullet Club?
I'd say anything's possible.
You know, Brodus, a lot was made of the WWE Network's launch, and there was all kinds of reports about the talent not being informed on how that would change the payout structures, you know, pay-per-view bonuses, etc. Was that ever really fully explained to you on all the different changes as far as the payouts?
I think when most of the information was probably given, I was already gone. They were still putting everything together, kind of, that, you know, and they said that everything would kind of be the same, just differently. I don't know much of the specifics of it, to be honest with you. You know, and like I said, I was out of it since June, and the network, you know, it was still kind of, you know, getting everything going. So I can't really remember a specific conversation alluding to anything other than we had those questions, like, what does this mean for pay-per-view? What does this mean for, like, every time we're clicked on and our stuff is watched, is that the same as, like, you get credits in a movie or a TV show, like reruns? You know, we didn't know. But I'm sure they, you know, I'm sure they know now, but I wasn't around probably when all that stuff.
What was the reaction to CM Punk leaving WWE at the end of January? And do you think it could have been related to the payouts of the WWE Network debut?
I don't know. Punk is a good friend of mine, and you know, it sucked to see him go because I enjoyed talking to him. And, you know, we still talk, and still every now and then I'll shoot him a text here, we're doing stuff like that. But that's about as far as I know about that. You know, business end of it. Anytime a top guy goes like that, it's not good for anybody. But that's between him and them. I always had a rule that if my name's in it, and if it's not in it, I'm not, you know, it's not my thing. So I got enough problems worrying about me and my mouth. So,
right.
And my dirty, I wear my expressions on my face. So it's hard for me when I don't like somebody or I'm frustrated not to give looks. And I would get in a lot of trouble for giving looks, stuff like that. So my focus was on me walking by a mirror trying to look like I was pissed off or frustrated. I didn't really focus on anybody else too much.
Brodus, do you actually have the WWE Network? And if you do, what do you think of it so far?
They gave it to us for free. And I watch all the old stuff. You know, like, I like the fact if I go in and I punch in Haku or Ming, I can watch all his matches. Or the American Dream, I can watch all his stuff. I think as a wrestling fan, it's for a library. If you want to watch film, if you're an up-and-coming wrestler, if you want to continue to grow your skills, it's a great library. That's what I use it for when I use it. And, you know, to be honest, I have it because I have a giant library collection of stuff. And, you know, I wouldn't say that I'm like, if you grab my phone right now, there's not an app there.
Okay, so your stuff, unlike the network, your stuff is probably, you know, unedited and you know, so has the original music and tech and all that stuff, right?
Yeah. So, you know, I can't tell you the last time I watched it. You know, so, like I said, if I'm not in it, it's, you know, I get a lot of stuff on Twitter, but I never saw the countdown stuff I did, and the fans seem to like that. So, I guess that's cool. But, yeah, I don't watch much of it. Other than, you know, I watch, like I said, if I want to watch old Starrcade, I got the DVD. So, you know, I'm still there. Let's pop it in. or burn a lot of stuff on my computer to my iPad. So, I'm a big Japan fan, so watch a lot of stuff over there.
Do you think you'll eventually wrestle in Japan?
It is a goal of mine. It is something I want to do. I got some TV show stuff I'm doing right now, and got a movie I'm shooting. But after that, all my efforts are going to be focused to Japan or maybe even TNA run or whatever. But definitely not done in terms of like working for another organization.
Brodus, what would you consider, you know, with your whole career with WWE? What was the highlight? What was the pinnacle of being in WWE? And I have to think on the flip side, lowest point would have probably been what WrestleMania 29 when you had a scheduled match at WrestleMania 20 and it didn't happen. Can you maybe more on the positive side though? What would you consider your highlight in WWE?
I think I have two highlights. One was Wrestling Edge. He was just a class act, and to wrestle him one-on-one on SmackDown in the main event was really, really an honor. And not knowing that he was going to have, that WrestleMania was his last match, to be a part of that was really, you know, humbling. And obviously, coming out with Mama Clay in the Bridge Club and cutting a promo at WrestleMania was pretty cool. And obviously, The low spot was the match getting cut. And to be honest with you, I don't think I ever recovered from it, to be completely honest. It's just one of those things where you just don't know if you can ever get back. And to be in that position and never actually wrestling in the ring at WrestleMania, and the Battle Royal didn't count. I didn't, you know. So for me, never wrestling in a WrestleMania match, competing in a WrestleMania match, is something that I'll always, you know, it's just one of those things where, like, damn, you know, this sucked. And the circumstances, you know, you can't control that. And, you know, there's no bitter feelings, and they did everything they could. And, you know, I'll tell anybody else it says different, you know, I don't know what the hell they're talking about. They did everything they could to get us that match, and we just didn't have the time. And we were in Gorilla till the very end. And Mr. McMahon said, I'm very sorry. And I accepted his apology, and I believe it was sincere. And it's just something that you just never get over. It's like you're Super Bowl and you twist your ankle at home, you know, and you can't play. So, you know, all your friends and family that you fly out, the preparation and interviews, stuff, you know, you just don't get over that. You know, you just don't. And if you do, then I guess maybe the only way you get over it is by getting that match. And I started that 365 for Redemption and won a whole year and then got to WrestleMania. And my last one was, like, the message is there is no redemption. There's some things you just can't get back. And that's where I left it.
I was just going to say, Brodus, I mean, you've been developmental. You went through the process. You went through Deep South, you went through Florida Championship Wrestling, NXT, you get on the main roster, you go to SmackDown, Raw, and here it is, your chance to be on the big stage, and I'd say the WWE dropped the ball. I mean, they booked your match, and they just didn't deliver on it.
Well, I mean, you got Taker and Punk, and they're going, and, you know, the streak, and it's the greatest, you know, the greatest character in the history of our company. And you got Paul Heyman out there, and those guys go, who the hell am I or anybody else to tell them that, you know, hey, it's time, you know? If you're going to get bumped, getting bumped by the Undertaker, that's just what it is, you know?
True.
And
right.
You can't, you know? And like I said, they did. My bitterness is not with them at all. It's just the circumstance, because I was in there, and I saw them scrambling, trying everything. And I went through it the year before. Right before we went out, they were like, if we don't have time, I don't think we're going to be able to get it in. And John came up to me and said, I'm going to go to the bathroom. About 10 minutes be enough? And I said, 10 minutes will work. And Cena went to use the restroom, so he wasn't ready to go out. And that's the only reason why you saw Brodus Clay and the Bridge Club.
Huh.
So, you know, and that's a top guy who really didn't have to give a damn, and he did. So Cena will always be all right in my book because he didn't have to do that, and nobody knows he did that. He didn't do that. He didn't say it in front of anybody else. He just said it to me, and he walked out. So
wow.
I know they did everything they could to try to make it happen. It just didn't happen, but it doesn't mean it didn't, you know, you just don't get back from that. The only way you get back from that is that the following year you have a better match, and it just didn't happen.
What was your opinion when Undertaker was defeated, that the streak finally came to an end?
I was just like everybody else. I was shocked. I had no idea. I didn't think, you know, but if there was ever a guy going to do it, clearly Brock could do it. I just didn't think, you know, it's just one of those things where you just don't think it's going to happen. But then the other side of it is, if that was Undertaker's last match, and Taker being who he is and what he is in this wrestling business, every great wrestler goes out on his back. So that's just how it is. You know? So I was there. I was watching it on the screen, and I went, holy, that just happened? Did that just happen? And you could have dropped the pin. And, you know, never watch it again. Don't want to watch it again. Saw it live, and that's enough for me.
Brodus, I know right at this point you're thinking about the future, as you should be. I think the future's still bright for you. Do you think somewhere down the line we may see you back in WWE? Do you think the door is open for a return? And I guess maybe the bigger question is, would you like to go back there and have one more opportunity to entertain the WWE Universe?
You know what? In my mind, I guess never say never, but I honestly haven't thought about it at all. I'm looking at other things, and I think that's the way your mindset needs to be. I know a few guys are like, oh, I'm going to be back. And I'm like, don't, you know, as hard as it is to get there the first time. In my case, I was lucky. I got there twice. To think there's a third time, you can't think like that. And you got to move on to other things. And if the phone rings one day or something like that, or lightning strikes three times, I guess, you know, that I'll make that decision. But as of right now, WWE was a great chapter in my life, and that book is closed. I'm not looking back. And, you know, they got so many great up and coming young guys and all that kind of stuff, you know, that they're doing their thing. And WWE is WWE. So, you know, and just not really looking back. I don't really dwell on it too much.
Well, Brodus, I really appreciate you you talking to us today. This has been great to talk to you. I guess you finally made it now. You've been on the Gerwick Report podcast, so it's
I made it. You know, like
you're officially big time now.
I'm cool. You know, maybe now I can get one of the votes or something. You know.
Hey, there you go. Well, we definitely do appreciate it, and we do wish you a lot of luck wherever it may be. If it's in WWE again, TNA, Ring of Honor, who knows? Maybe we'll see you in New Japan, the Bullet Club. But you know, we'll definitely be following you. And
anytime, fellas, I appreciate it.
Thank you.